You're with Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, welcome back. Welcome back to the second hour of Locked and Loaded today. Just before we move into conversation with my next guest, I just want to look at some more items that are making the news at this point in time today. From Davos, from the World Economic Forum, we're getting reports back of pushing towards green carbon footprint monitoring from J. Michael Evans, the president of Alibaba Platform. He says, we are developing through technology an ability for consumers to measure their own carbon footprint, where they travel, what they are eating, and so on and so forth. Of course, this is not being set up for your benefit. They are obviously going to be harvesting information from that and potentially using it to restrict your movements, to restrict your consumer choices, and to make your life just that little bit less enjoyable. Another thing that's making the news is the EU has proposed a 1.4 billion euro fund to help farmers that are impacted by surging costs. Of course, at the moment, we're being told that there's no money to do this, there's no money to do that. There doesn't seem to be a shortage of funds when it comes to throwing weapons overseas, or in this case, printing money to help farmers impacted by surging costs. And of course, we should be helping farmers because they're growing our food, and they're one of the reasons why we're still alive. If they weren't growing food and harvesting crops and producing milk and eggs and dairy produce and meat and so on and so forth, we wouldn't be alive right now. So for sure, help the farmers, but understand that this is just more printed money that will ultimately drive inflation up higher and increase the cost of living to you. So that's a proposition set forward by the EU. In Bangladesh, we're told that Hajj pilgrims this year will have to show health checkup reports and COVID-19 vaccine certificates during immigration at the airport this year. This COVID business, there are some people, they're like dogs with bones. Some governments are like dogs with bones. They just don't want to drop it. Bangladesh is one of them, talking about the Hajj pilgrimage that's coming up this year. That's something else to be aware of too, irrespective of what religion you practice or don't practice. They're trying to restrict you in that as well. So that's something to bear in mind going forward. This is Rick Munn. This is Locked and Loaded. This is TNT Radio. We'll be right back.
Pointed conversation powered by the facts.
It's always a balanced conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, I'm very happy to be joined for the first time on Locked and Loaded today by Mr. Kevin Corbett. A little bit of background about Kevin. Kevin is a doctor. He has qualified as a registered nurse as far back as 1986. He worked on the UK's first HIV/AIDS ward in Middlesex Hospital, London, in 1987. He did a postgraduate nursing research plan on respiratory patients at King's College London from 1987 to 1989, where he received his Master's of Science. And he also did social science research from 95 to 01 into HIV and AIDS patients' experiences of HIV testing, for which he received a doctorate. Dr. Kevin Corbett, welcome to TNT Radio. Welcome to Locked and Loaded, and thank you for taking the time out today to speak with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Rick, for inviting me on the show.
You're more than welcome, Kevin. You have quite an extensive background in research, an extensive background in medical practice. I have spoke with various people over the course of this year from different areas of the medical professional field, yeah, from nurses, from teaching college professors, surgeons, doctors, the whole gamut. What I want to try and speak with you about today is your background, especially in and around testing, the way that you have seen the NHS within the UK in particular responding to the events of the last 2 years and the fallout to that. Tell us a little bit about where you're at the moment. Are you still in practice at this point in time, or have you stepped back yet?
Well, Rick, I retired from clinical practice before the COVID era before 2020, just before actually. And I actually retired from my university career in 2016. So when COVID first hit, I was retired. You know, I'm a pensioner basically. And
You don't look like a pensioner, Gavin.
I was looking forward to a nice, peaceful, quiet retirement where I could travel the world and just enjoy myself after working for 40 years in the National Health Service and the university research sector. So when this happened 2 years ago, I very quickly realized what was happening, because my area of knowledge that I'd researched for my PhD 26 years ago was HIV testing, and that involved PCR testing. So I found myself in dialogue 2 years ago with the Public Health England, with Professor Maria Zambon, who headed up the COVID testing for the UK. And I realized very quickly that there was no proper scientific basis to the COVID tests that they were using, the PCR tests. And I decided to then speak out about this, because I was no longer on the nursing register. I couldn't be prosecuted. I couldn't be publicly humiliated. And I've spoken out ever since. So, and I felt that was my duty, Rick, as a qualified nurse, to indicate to the public what was unethical, but also what was unscientific about what the government had been doing in terms of rolling out these PCR and lateral flow tests, because there was no isolated purified virus to base these tests on when they developed them 2 years ago. They were rushed through, and as you can see in the last 2 years, we've had this this medical apartheid introduced, which is not just the testing, but it's also now COVID vaccination. Actually, it's a misnomer. They're not vaccines, they're actually gene injections. And also repurposed drugs like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. So we're in this state now of, and you indicated it in your news bulletin a minute ago, we're in this situation now where all countries of the world, a lot of them have been introducing these mandates and these prohibitions. So people want to move from A to B, they've got to produce this bit of paper, they've got to have these gene injections. So we're in this situation of basically a medical apartheid due to misguided science and unscientific practices. And I would argue that the PCR tests and the lateral flow tests, and I'm not alone in arguing this, have no scientific basis, because there is no isolated virus that's purified to base those tests on. They're based on computer algorithm modeled virus sequences. And that's not the same as a purified isolated virus from nature. This is what they've done. If you look at all the papers in 2020, all the academic research papers in Nature and all the other high profile journals, they've all not purified or isolated SARS-CoV-2 according to the accepted regimens that have been in virology for the last 20, 25, 30 years. They've gone ahead with in silico modeling, which is gene sequencing. And they actually said that in the Drosten PCR test in January 2020. And this is where I debated with the public health authorities in the UK. And this is all in the public domain. People can go on to Christine Massey's website in Canada, and you can see literally hundreds of reports of there being no isolated virus held by any public health laboratory across the world, including in the UK. So this is very important for your listeners to understand. So basically, this is what's happened to me. I've become a spokesperson for the other side, for the opposition, really, to this. And I'm very happy to do that. And why I've done that, Rick, is that I was awarded a PhD on the basis of that sort of data in 2001. So I cannot lie. It's in my PhD on page 71 that the PCR test is not a diagnostic test. and it cannot be used to diagnose any infection. So I would be unfaithful to my research heritage and my professional nursing ethics if I hadn't done what I've done in the last 2 years. So I hope that explains myself.
Well, it does, and I'm glad you've said what you said, because I'll tell you why. One of the major criticisms that's levied against anyone that speaks out against the current narrative is, for example, if I had have just said what you said, even if I quoted you, who is an expert and who has the doctorate, they would say to me, well, you're not a doctor, you're not qualified, you don't have a PhD, you don't have a master's, you don't have experience, you don't know what you're talking about, so you just sit there and talk on your radio show and leave the science to the experts. So it's good that someone is coming in with no agenda, which is yourself, and no fear of, for example, being struck off because you're retired, and no criticism can be levied at you that you don't know what you're talking about, because you've got 40 odd years of experience, you've done a PhD in this 26 years ago, and you've been looking at PCR tests for the best part of a quarter of a century. So nobody can turn around and point the finger at you and say, Kevin, you don't know what you're talking about, you just sit there and enjoy your retirement, because leave this to the experts. No, because ultimately, with all the respect that's due to you, you are an expert in this. So I would say it would be very difficult to pick holes in the points that you're making, but yet people will still continue to try and pick holes in those arguments. I had a doctor on
recently. Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, you see where I'm getting at? Yeah, so that's why I want to talk to you the way I'm talking to you today. This is straight from the proverbial horse's mouth, from somebody that knows what they're talking about and has decades of experience in it, and has taken the step to put their head above the parapet and challenge the establishment and be a spokesperson to say, well, okay, maybe that guy's not a doctor. Maybe that guy's not a virologist. Maybe that guy has no experience in the medical profession, but I do, and I know what I'm talking about, and I've wrote a PhD on it. So for that respect, I thank you for being so open and honest in your opening statement.
Well, Rick, the thing about this is, I'll tell you what happens to people like me. There's levels of expertise, and whatever we think about medical doctors, the public is presented with medical doctors being elevated to the highest position in society, almost like priests were in, you know, a couple of hundred years ago. You know, and I'm speaking, I was raised a Roman Catholic, and I'm still a practicing Roman Catholic. Uh-huh. And that doesn't mean, of course, I support the Pope or the hierarchy, but I've been raised with a Catholic heritage. And the position of the priests in society has been displaced, and medicine's been put in that place. Uh-huh. So, you know, and you take your ordinary jobbing doctor who comes out of medical school, comes out with an MBBS degree. Now, I taught in two medical schools in the UK. I taught at St. George's Medical School for 5 years as senior lecturer in primary care. And I taught at the Hull York Medical School for a couple of years when I was in the Department of Health Sciences at the University of York. And I was a senior lecturer then in adult nursing. So I've taught undergraduate medical students as they come up to graduation. They leave with an honorary title of doctor. When they graduate, they basically leave with a Bachelor of Science degree or its equivalent in medicine and surgery, in MBBS, whatever it's called now. And that's it. They don't leave with a PhD. Yet the public perception of doctors is that they are truly doctorate level, that they've, and the definition of a doctorate, a PhD, is that you've created a new area of knowledge. You've created something novel that has never been created before. Now, most doctors who register with the GMC don't do that until well into their career, and they do something called a professional doctorate, an MD, a doctor of medicine, which is basically like a professional doctorate in education. So this is what people have been, they've been, unfortunately, you know, the propaganda around medicine and the association with power, knowledge, and money has made medicine, has elevated medicine beyond the pale, really. And you know, I'm speaking as a qualified nurse, and I've worked for many years, nearly 30 years in faculties of health and nursing and medicine and medical schools, and we're always secondary to the medical doctors, even though we might be better qualified. you know, always, there's always been this professional rivalry. However, I've always got on very well with consultant colleagues and medical colleagues, and maybe that's a gender issue, I don't know. But I think there's always been this over-elevation. And when it comes to issues over COVID science, what they'll say about people like me is, oh, you're not a medical doctor, so you don't count. So all your expertise is wiped out, you know, immediately. And this is the problem with this, because if you're a true scientist and trained in the scientific method, and I've been trained at master's and doctoral level in the scientific method, then it doesn't really, you know, it's what you're saying that's important, not where you come from. You know, and I think this is important for your listeners, Rick, because we're in this era now, especially after 2 years of this medical apartheid and propaganda, where citizens are doing their own science. They're educating themselves about scientific terminology and the scientific method, and they're looking critically at fields like virology and bacteriology and microbiology from a citizen science perspective. And there's a whole area of social science devoted to the expertise that the ordinary everyday person in the street can gain through their own education, their own self-education in science. So we mustn't underestimate that, because that's been a huge issue in the last 2 years, the emergence of citizen science around COVID. You know, I've been speaking up and down the country in the last 2 years. I've met so many ordinary everyday people. They're more expert than I am at understanding the PCR or lateral flow tests. They've educated themselves in their own networks and in their own family groups and their own social networks. And they've created groups where they've looked at this. I can think of loads of groups right across the northeast of England, for example, that have done this. And they're really expert. They send out emails. They know about the vax damage. They know about what Dr. Malone's just said, or what Peter McCulloch's just said, or what Andrew Kaufman said. And they really are there on all this science. So really, the authorities, if they're pillaring people like me and the ordinary person in the street, it won't really wash now, because the truth's out. And you can't keep the truth. You know, this is the situation. It's like an aeroplane landing at Heathrow. You know, you can have it circling the airport for hours and hours, but at some point that plane's got to land. And that's what's happened with all this COVID science. It's been the authorities thought they had it watertight, but it's been uncovered and unmasked in the last 2 years in a way that is just so refreshing to see. You know, and I worked in HIV, 40 years ago, and I uncovered and unmasked the science around HIV and AIDS and HIV testing, which again is another fraud. And we were pilloried, scientists out in the 1990s about this. We were isolated. People said we were crazy. We were ostracized. We were censored, basically, in the academic journals and in the media. But now that's much more difficult to do with COVID, because unlike HIV, the COVID era has affected many more people. So you can't keep a good dog down. You cannot batten down the hatches, and you cannot really censor in the way that they did 40 years ago. So I think that's the refreshing thing, Rick, about channels like yours and about what's happened in the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's interesting you use that analogy, you know, of an airplane in a holding pattern. You know, they're flying around and around the airport, and you can only stave that plane off for so long, because even if you don't give it permission to land, it's going to run out of fuel and it's going to hit the ground one way or the other. So whether they suppress us over a period of time, or this has to drop at some point. And even the fact that you're talking to me today, I mean, you and I would never have crossed paths. This station probably would not even be in existence were it not for the fact of the crimes that are being perpetuated on mankind at the minute, and the desire of people to rise up and state the truth. We're going to take a really quick break, and when we come back, there's something that I want to really dig into with you, because simply because of your knowledge and experience on it. This business of the PCR test, okay, it's something that people are aware of. It's something that I believe has been used as a driver for what's been going on over the last 2 years, a tool that they have used to leverage lockdowns and fear. I want to look at that when we come back after the break. I'm speaking with Dr. Kevin Corbett. I'm Rick Munn. This is TNT Radio. Don't go away. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me. I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
It's not what it seems. I was talking to...
Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Over 1,100 people are killed on Australian roads each year, and thousands more are seriously injured.
With 7 in 10 road users admitting to breaking the road rules.
It's time to be the change you want to see on the road.
We're asking all Australians to focus on road safety in the lead up to Fatality Free Friday.
Together, we can save thousands of families from a lifetime of grief.
Join us by taking and living the Australian Road Safety Foundation pledge to choose road safety.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Emergency, police, fire, ambulance.
Yeah, g'day, mate. Need an electrician.
Do you need police, fire or ambulance?
No, I just need an electrician. I've got a couple of crappy PowerPoints I need to get changed
Look,
over.
Look, I'm sorry. I can only connect you to the police, fire or ambulance.
I need to talk to an electrician.
This is emergencies only.
This is an emergency. I'm moving into the house and I need to get an electrician to change these PowerPoints.
000's sole job is to connect you to your nearest emergency service. So please, stay relevant and save 000 for urgent assistance only.
This is today's News Talk Radio. TNT. TNT.
Okay, I'm speaking very frankly and very openly and very honestly, I might add, with Dr. Kevin Corbett this morning. I don't want to go through your list of qualifications again, save to say that you have 40-odd years experience, you have a doctorate in research and experience in working with PCR testing, especially in and around AIDS when it first hit the scene back around about 1987. You have co-authored a paper also with Dr. Mike Yeadon, the Corman Drosden Review report, which rebutted the validity of the PCR test for SARS-CoV-2, which in your own words, you described as an unscientific test. Okay, for the lay people out there, for myself, in simple, common terms that even a child could understand, this PCR test, okay, we're being told we need to take it. And if we take it, we test, quote, positive for COVID, unquote. So what are we testing positive for? If that thing comes back as a positive test, what are we actually testing positive for? I know about cycles, and which should be run at 25, 28 cycles to give an accurate test, if an accurate test is to be done. The governments have been insisting they run at 41 cycles that can pick up anything. What are those tests picking up?
Well, that's a very good question. And in fact, this is the Achilles heel of whole fraud, because they're saying that if your test comes back positive, it means you've got viral material in your body. Uh-huh. Now, that's unproven, because when they developed the PCR for COVID, for SARS-CoV-2, SARS-CoV-2 is the presumed virus that they're saying is causing COVID-19. And COVID-19 is this new so-called new disease, which I dispute as well. It's not a new disease. There's nothing unique about COVID symptoms. They're basically repackaged pre-existing symptoms. But with SARS-CoV-2 test, the PCR, this was developed by a German scientist called Victor Drosten. It was published in a paper in January 2020. The paper was co-authored by Professor Maria Zambon, who headed up the UK's COVID testing service in 2020. And she was a UK member of the SAGE group of scientists. And basically, this test was developed across the EU, 8 or 9 authors on that original paper in the journal Eurosurveillance. And if you go to that journal, and it's available online, so your readers can go to that paper and they can look at it and they can read that there was no live virus to base that test on. They based that test on in silico modeled gene sequences, which means that means that they use sophisticated next generation or Sanger sequencing technology to piece together bits of what they thought were viral genetic material, and from that they created, through in silico modeling, a whole genome or part of the genome. And in silico modeling, it's in silico refers to the silicon, the computer chips in the computer. So it's making reference to the fact that these are constructions of a computer algorithm. So when people dumb that down to saying that, you know, there is no virus and it's developed on a computer, actually there's a lot of truth to that, because they didn't definitively define that material that they based the test on as viral. They didn't purify it. And if you go to any virology lab or any virology textbook, they're experts at purifying viruses. They've done this with viruses that infect bacteria and lower organisms in the world. These are called bacteriophages. And there's multiple papers showing that you always purify and then you do genetic material, genetic analysis on the purified, validated extracellular viral material. They haven't done that with SARS-CoV-2. There's not one paper on this in the academic journals that definitively shows that this viral, this material they're saying is viral, comes from outside the human cells. And the material that they're saying is viral is very likely either endogenous retroviruses, microcellular material, or exosomes. And there are many other medical authorities are saying this in the world. You could look at Dr. Andrew Kaufman, Dr. Thomas Cowan. And indeed, with HIV and AIDS, 40 years ago, there was a group of scientists called the Perth Group of Scientists, led by a biophysicist who's just passed away, Eleni Papadopoulos-Eliopoulos, and they published multiple papers demonstrating exactly the same thing with HIV, that it is not proven as an extracellular viral agent. These are our own genetic material that have been weaponized against us through these false tests, these unscientific PCR tests. Now, your listeners will know this, I'm sure, that the PCR test is basically a laboratory methodology to amplify and multiply what are thought to be bits of genetic material. But unfortunately, it's multiply confounded with all sorts of contaminants. So as you move from cycle to cycle, as you go up the cycle numbers over 20, undoubtedly you will find a positive result. You will be reported as positive. So the thing about the PCR test is not to do it, with the lateral flow test, not to do it. The HIV antibody test or the antigen test don't have them. Once you go through that testing doorway, that portal, you cannot go back, and you'll have that test result hanging over you. And this is why, Rick, the whole of the economy in the UK is grinding to a halt, because people have been taking these PCR lateral flow tests and they've been socially isolating, they've been staying at home, working from home, and everything comes to a halt. So you cannot have an economy that's run without social interaction and social grouping. You cannot have a socially distant economy. And this, I think, is part of the evidence leading people to understand that there are bigger issues behind the COVID fraud, not just the medical apartheid and the medical fraud to do the testing, but also the issues about the economy and about the reshaping of the economy, what's called the reset. The digital and the transhumanist agendas are there behind all this. And I have to say, there's a great deal of evidence to show that this is true, what I'm saying, that if there's no conspiracy, there's certainly a confluence of interests, vested interests globally, that are shaping this. And you can see this very clearly now. And you can see now also, Rick, in the media, they're trying to quick start, you know, like a faulty car or motorbike, they're trying to quick start more and more epidemics. We've had the pediatric hepatitis cases. We've had the monkeypox virus stuff now. This is all ridiculous. It's all the health authorities in the UK, the UK Health Security Agency, trying to pump prime more and more fear and contagion fear in the population. And they're using groups in society that are vulnerable, that are over-medicated and over-tested to do this, to basically create data to say there's another epidemic in the offing. And of course, with any epidemic that they create, there's going to be new vaccines and new drug treatments, because that's what it's all about. It's about moving vaccines and drugs into the population down the supply chain. You know, drugs into bodies, they said it was in AIDS, and that's exactly what we've had now. And I would say also, Rick, the issue is there's been a false choice presented to the population. So they've been pushed down the jab route to have the COVID vaccines. And if they don't want that, they've been pushed into the ivermectin or the hydroxychloroquine field, you know, repurposed drugs. And I would say you don't need any of these, because there's nothing scientific about the PCR tests and SARS-CoV-2. If there's no purified virus, then there is no basis to SARS-CoV-2. And COVID-19 is a repackaged set of pre-existing symptoms that have been there in the population, that have just been brought to the public attention, repackaged with a lot of fear and, contagion fear. And people have been told it's a new disease, and it's no such thing. It's already background disease that's been repackaged. So this false dichotomy, this false choice of you either have, you know, the bug killers, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, or you take the vax. I would say it's a Hobson's choice. You don't need any of this. It's absolute rubbish. And I'm not alone in saying a lot of this, but I probably am alone as one of the only health scientists in the UK saying it in this way. But I do understand that a lot of doctors have got behind the COVID scam because they feel frightened, they don't understand the PCR, and they don't feel competent to speak out about it. So I feel sorry for those. But I would say to any doctor, nurse, or healthcare professional, they have a duty of medical ethics and healthcare ethics across any population that they're treating. And they've been part of this. They will be brought to account for what they've done or not done. And not doing anything is as bad as doing the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the detail that you have just provided concerning that PCR test. We dipped into a little bit of ethics there as well. Something else I wanted to talk to you about today was informed consent. Just in a nutshell, the way I'm seeing what you've just said is that PCR test effectively, the more cycles they run it from, it's picking up historical debris somewhere from within your system that they are putting forward as being evidence that you have SARS-CoV-2. It's like a centrifuge in a laboratory. A centrifuge uses gravity to separate, you know, particle matter from liquid. So if you put a mixture of sediment and liquid in a centrifuge, you just spin that thing once, it's not going to separate anything. Spin it five times, you're going to see a little bit of sediment forming at the bottom of the test tube. Spin it all day long and you're going to have complete separation. Is that not the same principle? The they spin, the more they get?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Rick, look, there was a paper published, I think it was 2019, and it showed that in the purification process in virology, it is impossible to differentiate in your centrifugation of viral material when you're purifying it. It's impossible to decide what is true viral particles from other microvesicles and exosomes and all these things sediment together. So when they're saying to the public, even when they're saying they've purified these agents, and they cause human disease. This is a lie. You know, I can quote you the, you know, in your break, I can pull out the paper and give the reference, and it's open access. So people can read this for themselves. This is confounded science, you know. It's absolutely confounded. But they're not even bothering with the purification processes. They're going straight from with flu symptoms and cold symptoms and taking samples from those patients and looking at the genetic constitution, the genetic sequencing from bits of material from those patients. They're not even purifying them and deciding through using Koch's criteria or Rivers' criteria that these are genuine extracellular agencies that they've identified. They're just going straight to the high-tech new next generation sequencing, Sanger sequencing, and it all looks wonderful and it all looks watertight. But as you pick through the research designs in the academic papers, you can easily see that there's huge confounding here, there's huge conflation, and it's basically science gone wrong. Very much like what happened with in the Soviet Union in the 1930s and 40s and 50s. Agricultural science was totally misguided by a Russian scientist called Lysenko. And people can look this up. Lysenko science, once it was agricultural science of the Soviet Union that went completely against the mainstream across the world. And the Soviet economy, the agricultural economy, failed year after year until they decided that they got the science wrong and they rectified it, and then their agricultural economy kicked in and got better. And this is exactly what's happened on the global scale here with us. And now you're seeing the economic effects of all this, Rick, which are absolutely disastrous. People told to stay at home, people told not to go in the office. We've even had the unions getting behind this, totally misguided. The civil service unions saying that they must stay at home, they want to work from home most of the week. This is playing into, actually it's playing into a very dangerous part of human nature, which is basically laziness, if you ask me. Mm-hmm. Laziness and mendacity, you know, and part of human nature isn't good. There's a dark side to human nature. People will want to do the easy thing. And but also, Rick, I would say in defense of the unions and defense of people who are socially distancing, they've been told to do that in the last 2 years. So they've been told and misdirected by the authorities. And if they're exploiting that for their own ends, one could argue, good on them, because, you know, they're getting their own back for what's happened, you know? Mm-hmm. You're getting in some days at home to spend time with the family. And you can't really deny people that. But I do think we've got to get back to work. I do think we've got to get through all this. We've got to remove this contagion fear from the population. But you see, it's been put in place very, very carefully through huge behavioral science programs in the last 2 years. You will not remove this. It will not be removed easily. And of course, it's there now for the next contagion scare, the next false epidemic. And you can see this now, that this is what's going to happen if we're not careful. We're going to be put into another epidemic and another one.
Yeah, I want to take some of those. Well, I want to take all those points that you've just raised. We're going to take another very quick break just for 2 minutes. When we come back, I want to run out the end of this interview just looking at habitual, what's been seeded into our head. You know, they say something takes, you know, 30 to 60 days to become habit forming. There's a lot of behaviors that have been learned and reinforced over the last 2+ years with this whole COVID scandemic that I believe are now ingrained into people's behavioral patterns. I want to look a little bit about the way the PCR tests are carried out, these deep nasal swabs and throat swabs. We're going to look at some of that when we come back. Hopefully we'll cover all of it after the break. You're listening to TNT Radio. Dr. Kevin Corbett, Rick Munn, do not go away.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
The United States is truly in a breakdown crisis. And as I have previously mentioned, I wonder if the November midterm elections will even go ahead. They probably will, but we are in for some volatile months with an escalating war danger with Russia and a serious economic crisis which will be much worse by year's end. Already, supply chains of many commodities are in crisis, which will directly impact plans for the November elections. For instance, Louisiana Secretary of State Kyle Wadoan said his state had to contact every paper producer in North America to ensure supplies were ready for November. This is a crisis that demands immediate attention and bipartisan action, he said, and added that a paper shortage could lead to a serious erosion in the confidence of the elections. This is just one anecdote, but America is hanging by a thread. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
Hi, I'm Charlize Theron with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Almost all the puppies for sale at your local mall were churned out by breeding facilities called puppy mills.
Constant confinement drives the dogs mad. They are impregnated continually until they can no longer produce a litter.
If you choose a dog from the mall, a dog you could have saved from the pound will die.
Contact PETA to learn how you can make a difference at 757-622-PETA. Or visit PETA.org.
News more twisted than soap operas.
Ugh.
And with worse actors.
You can't be serious.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, we're back with Dr. Kevin Corbett. We're looking at PCRs, pretty specifically at PCR testing. We went into what they were, how unscientific they were, yet how they are being used to drive what has been happening forward for the last 2 years, and they don't look like they're going to go away anywhere because of this, the beginnings, at least what looks like the beginnings of another outbreak of monkeypox. Whether or not that manifests itself into the levels that COVID did or not, time will only tell. These PCR tests, let me ask you one more question about them. There was a big fear element to them as well. People were made incredibly uncomfortable by these being rammed, and I mean rammed up people's nasal cavities and twisted and then shoved down people's throats and swabbing the areas at the back of the throats before they were taken away. Was that not completely unnecessary, given we were told that a face mask would catch any, you know, any particles that were escaping from our body to infect other people? Was that necessary, or was that not part of the fear element to what was being done? Because let's face it, I think it put a lot of people off even getting the tests, or certainly filled them with a little bit of dread at the thought of having these swabs rammed up their nose by doctors and nurses.
Well, very good point there, Rick. I mean, first of all, a lot of these tests weren't administered to the public by doctors or nurses, not registered nurses or registered physicians. A lot of people recruited by the government to do these tests in drive-in centres across the UK. And these weren't registered healthcare professionals. They'd be trained very quickly by healthcare professionals, probably, but they weren't registered people that you could report to a professional body. So if anything went wrong, it was at the risk of the patient or the person having the test. You're absolutely right about these PCR tests. They're very intrusive. We never swabbed deep into the nasal cavity, into what's called the oropharyngeal area under the brain. It's just a few cells from the brain, really. And especially in children, that's extremely dangerous, because if there's anything on that swab, you can introduce into infection into that area of the oropharynx, and it can easily track back into meninges, which are the lining of the brain, and you can get a meningitis. And there have been cases of damage, people being damaged by these tests because of the intrusive nature of them. But you're absolutely right. You know, there's a psychological impact of these tests as well. The intrusive nature of them is invasive, and they can feel and be reported by patients as a form of medical rape. And that may be a very strong term to use, but when you're deeply penetrating into the human body, you've got to be very careful of what you're doing. And the nature of these tests was such that there was lots of reportage around them being dangerous, around people having infections as a result of having these tests, and damage to the individuals as a result of them. And so I would say also there's a quality control issue about these tests, because not just where they're manufactured And there was lots of uncovering of the contracts that were put out for these tests were given to government-sponsored vested interests, basically. So there you've got the government, you know, creating millions for their own friends. But also, you've got an issue over the quality control of the science of these tests. And this just wasn't there within their own terms. Even if you believe that SARS-CoV-2 exists, and it's a new virus, the quality control and the testing wasn't there. So that's why you had so much false positive reporting. The quality control, the standard operating procedures for these tests weren't uniform. You've got different cycle thresholds being used across the UK and across different countries. So you've got massive reporting of people positive who are negative and vice versa, because they're useless. They're basically useless and should never have been used to diagnose any infection, because they can't diagnose infections and yeah. they should never have been used for that purpose. But there we go. I mean, this is probably all known already to a lot of your listeners. But the thing is, people have been coerced into taking these tests because of their workplace, because of their social network, their family networks. The public health tracking has gone through families. Somebody tests positive, other people have been contacted, and they've been brought into this through the testing apps, NHS testing apps. And this has got to stop. You know, people have got to say no to this at a basic level for this to stop. And it does only thrive through public support and public consent. It's individual consent that allows this to go on.
You made a very good point there, you know, about using the term medical rape. And that may sound, as you said, excessive, but when you think about it, okay, your head is the center for all your, you know, your eyesight, your smell, your taste, your ears. That's why in a, you know, if you're being attacked, the most natural human instinct is to, you know, cover up your head. If you're in a boxing match, you're not going to continue. You don't want to punch people in the arms to take them out or in the thighs. You're going to try and strike them on the jaw. You're going to try and knock them on the temple. These are this is the center of all our sensory organs. Well, obviously the skin's another one, which covers the whole body. But the fact is, when you are taking something and you're shoving it so far up someone's nose, or it could even have been the thought of having something deeply inserted into your ear, for example, or up your nose, to me, that's less traumatic than, for example, having a blood test. Because in a blood test, you have an outstretched arm, it's away from your head, the needle goes in. And that's an invasive procedure as well, by the way. But it's not just the same as having someone ramming a swab down your throat and causing a gag reflex, which a lot of people have a fear of as well. Yeah. Or that simple fact of some people are actually, they don't like having things shoved up their nose or into their ear holes. And I believe that is a sinister element to what happened, because I have seen horror videos of nurseries assistants holding children in headlocks while they've been threshing and an extreme trauma and doing these tests. Now, if you're a kid and you have a bad experience in a hospital or in a medical setting, that can set you up for trauma for life. My daughter had a terrible experience with a consultant taking blood when she was a child, when she was extremely dehydrated. And that has given her, that specific occurrence has given her a real terror of needles that still exists to this day. And she's almost 17 years of age. I can remember bad experiences of dentists when I was a kid that have never left me and so on. Does this not also breed a generation of kids out there, small children who potentially will have a great fear of medical procedures or medical staff based on highly traumatic experiences with PCR tests that are carried out unnecessarily when they're children? Is that not another aspect of this?
It is another aspect. And with children especially, it's not just the testing, but it's the masking and the social isolation will destroy their what we call their developmental key stages. And it will mean that we're breeding and developing a whole generation of young people that are developmentally behind. They'll be developmentally negatively affected through this. Any health visitor knows this. And this is what's so sad about what's happened, is that healthcare professionals have been trained in how to do things the right way. And all this has been put aside because the contagion fear of COVID-19 and SARS-CoV-2. And you see, the thing about the PCR test, and as you've described it very well, going into very intimate part under the brain, into the oropharynx, it's also a power play that's happening. Once you've been invaded in this way, it's like being colonized by an army, a foreign army. Your body has been, the authority over your body has been compromised. Your sovereignty has been compromised. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you're not sovereign over your own body. Somebody else has power over it. And that's exactly what happens in any medical test, a blood test, any sample you give. You are basically giving up sovereignty over your body to an outside agency, and you're giving them power. You're empowering them to use information from your body potentially against yourself. And you see this now with any blood test that anybody gives today in any NHS facility or even in the private sector. They can test that blood for HIV without your express consent, because it's an opt-out process, which means that you've got to know that any blood test that you're having done for cholesterol or for anything, or routinely for warfarin therapy or whatever, they can test it for HIV. Because if you don't know this, you can't say to the person taking the blood, I don't want my blood tested for HIV. I don't want it tested for anything else. They will automatically run those tests. So that's what they're also doing now with HIV. The more you test, the more positive tests you're going to get. The more tests you run, the more positives you're going to get. So it's fueling an HIV epidemic as well through the everyday routine access. And this is what people need to understand. If you haven't got any symptoms, why do you need a test?
Yeah.
If you're not ill, why do you need a test? And I would say to people, and this is probably what makes what I'm saying quite dangerous to the public health authorities, is don't do what they're saying. Don't take the tests. Don't have any of them. If you're not ill, if you're not sick, don't have the tests, you know, because they're running these tests on healthy individuals, you see, and they're pathologizing them. And then they're telling them, if the tests come back positive, because of all the methodological flaws in the tests, then they're telling them they've got a dangerous virus, or they're going to die of COVID-19, and they've got to socially isolate, they've got to have all these drugs and all these vaccines. It's unnecessary, totally unnecessary. Even if you got symptoms, I would say don't have these tests, because these tests, they are invasive, they actually colonize your body into a power base that you can't control. And once you're in that cycle of being tested, you become dependent. You become dependent on a higher agency, or a so-called higher agency. You become dependent on the medical industrial complex that's going to run your body, and it's going to inject you, and it's going to medicate you. And basically, that's the model of general practice in the UK since the Second World War. It's one of increasing dependency. So when people get to my age, and you know, I'm the wrong side of 65, and I'll soon be the wrong side of 70. When people get to my age, they're on multiple drugs, sometimes as many as 10 or 15 drugs, totally dependent on service for everything, overweight, unexercised bodies, overweight because they're eating the wrong foods, they've been given the wrong nutritional advice or no nutritional advice, and they're on a whole set of medications, pharmaceutical preparations for cholesterol, blood pressure, oh, you name it, a whole load of stuff that they do not need. They do not need. And if you track them back to when they were given those drugs, they had no symptoms, they were based on one-off readings, a blood pressure reading or a cholesterol reading, and the doctor said, oh, I think you better have these drugs, and they're left on these drugs until they're in their 80s or 90s if they live that long. And that's what's wrong with orthodox medicine. It is one of the increasing the public's dependency on pharmaceutical preparations that are marketed and cost a huge amount of money. You know, Rick, if your GP says to you, I think you need this drug. And you say, well, I'm not sure, I don't want it. And they say this, they said, well, I'll prescribe it. And it's at the pharmacy if you want to pick it up, you know? How often have you heard that? I've heard it so many times. And basically that GP gets paid for that, even though you don't take the drug. Yeah.
Just for writing the prescription.
Even for writing the script, even if that prescription isn't filled, you don't pick the drug up and you don't take it. That general practitioner service gets paid money by the clinical commissioning groups for that. And that's what makes GPs, and I'm talking about the general practices, not just the physicians, they're so happy to prescribe because it's through the prescribing that they get payment from the clinical commissioning groups in England. And this is what people don't realise, is that general practitioner services are actually just like BUPA or private healthcare. They're independent practitioners. They're independent organisations that are profit-making. Don't be misguided by the NHS sign over the GP's desk. They're not GP employees. They're not NHS employees. They are private sector, just like BUPA or just like your garage. They're running for a profit. And they do nothing unless they're paid to do it. They do nothing for free.
Kevin, listen, we could talk for about 10 hours in this. Of that, I have no doubt. Unfortunately, we're right up to time now. But I want to believe if this hasn't been too traumatic for you, I'll be able to get you on again over the next few weeks to continue this conversation. It's an important one to have.
Absolutely.
For now, Dr. Kevin Corbett, I want to give you massive respect and massive thanks for coming on today. I am absolutely sure you'll be back on the show again as long as you agree to that. Listeners, take note to what he's been saying.